Well, thanks everybody for coming out today. Looks like it's going to be a really nice symposium session. Looking forward to all the talks. This is really a compilation of work that's been carried on over the last 7 years through collaborators at Penn State University, the Rodale Institute, and the Sustainable Agricultural Systems Lab, Rotoria in Beltsville, USDA ARS. And to give some context, we're in the Chesapeake Bay watershed, and so there's a lot of concerns about nutrient management here, hypoxia in the bay. We have very diverse agricultural systems, a high density of animal agriculture. So there's a lot of interest in conservation in this region, interest in cover crops. This is also encouraged by different incentive programs. So, and there's a lot of interest by sustainable and organic growers in ways to integrate these cover crops and reduce tillage in their systems. Some approaches to reducing tillage and organic grain production include the use of perennials like alfalfa, reducing in tillage intensity, as well as reducing tillage and frequency. And we'll be focusing on reducing tillage frequency for today's talk, which I'll also refer to as rotational no-till. By no means are we suggesting that there's continuous organic no-till is possible, but just looking for different ways to reduce the intensity or the frequency of tillage in the operations. And you can see here in a 3-year rotation, highlighting the various different soil disturbance events that go on throughout that 3-year rotation, comparing a traditional organic grain production system to the rotational no-till, you can reduce the number of disturbance passes in the field in at least in half. And this is borne out in some energetic analysis that was conducted at Penn State University. Here, you're looking at a conventional no-till system, an integrated no-till system, and 3 organic systems, one with manure and legume, a rotational no-till system, which is the one we'll be highlighting today, and one with perennials. And the big reductions you can see come from the mineral fertilizers, which are very energy intensive, and then also some reductions in diesel fuel usage as you move away from the intensive tillage systems of the organic manure legume system. And here is some features of the organic rotational no-till as compared to the traditional organic no-till system, where you can find reductions in diesel fuel, less labor, greater energy efficiency, and less greenhouse gas emissions. It's important to highlight that these are cover crop-based systems. When you remove the primary control tactics like herbicides, cultivation, you remove mineral fertilizers from the system, you're asking a lot out of the cover crops. So these are cover crop-based systems that we're using to fill in some of the void of some of those major management practices. The two systems that we're targeting is a hairy vetch corn combination and a rye beans. These have been the two dominant combinations that we've been looking at over the years. And here are some yields from the different locations based on corn and soybean commodities. And what you're looking at here is a compilation of anywhere from 3 to 5 site years of data that were pooled to give you the yield potential at the different locations and the standard deviations around that, and then the county averages. And really, the purpose of the slide, it really does pool across a lot of management. It pulls across standard management, which would be just a single roll pass system, all the way to various different cultural strategies we've been implementing to enhance the yield performance. So the main purpose of this slide is to, one, show where our yield potentials are on an average, but the high degree of variation. So we do have the ability to reach equivalent yields to traditional organic and even conventional systems at times, but the systems are far more variable. And so that's the purpose of today's talk. We'll be looking at a lot of this variability and ways we've been targeting how to enhance the system. So the main factors contributing to the overall performance of the grain is weeds, which are the dominant problem that we've been addressing, soil moisture, crop population, and fertility. And this schematic includes various different pathways that show direct and indirect effects of these factors on overall grain yield. This could certainly represent a model for the rye soybean and the vetch corn. Today, I'm going to just be targeting the rye soybean system for the interest of time. As I mentioned, cover crops are an integral component of this system, and it's the main driver influencing these various factors. And so we've looked at a lot of strategies of how to optimize the performance of the cover crop, really essentially managing the cover crop as if it's a crop itself in order to get the services that you need out of it. And so we've been looking at the timing of planting and termination of the cover crops, seeding rates, equipment used to plant the cover crop as well as the cash crop. When focusing on the weeds, there are a number of factors that are influencing the overall weed performance. We see species-specific responses. The initial propagule levels, the seed bank is critically important. High seed banks, the system really reduces in its overall efficacy. And so we've been experimenting with high residue cultivation as well as a supplementary control tactic. Insects also become an issue in the system. I'll get at a little bit later in the talk, but affecting crop population. And we've been also looking a lot at nitrogen mineralization and mobilization from the standpoint of maximizing nitrogen use efficiency for the corn and trying to mobilize that nitrogen in the case of the soybeans to reduce the competitiveness of the weeds. There's a lot of different factors that we've been looking at. I'm only going to look at a couple of the main drivers in today's talk and how they interact. So planting and termination date, we had an experiment at Pennsylvania where we planted cereal rye across six different dates in the fall, had spring termination at four different dates, and we conducted this for two different cultivars of rye to look at the overall windows of opportunity for planting, characterizing the potential biomass and the phenological stage of development. And I'm going to skip the phenological slide for time today. Here you can see quite strikingly the difference in overall cover in the spring between early and a late planting, the amount of tillering and overall biomass that's occurred there. And so that difference at a single termination date creates a range of about 2,200 kilograms per hectare. And with a single delay in termination by 10 days here to May 30th, we can pick up that difference of about 2,200 kilograms per hectare. So roughly in this experiment, one spring day is approximately equal to five fall days, and this just underscores the greater flexibility you get with your fall planting as you're able to delay your management in the spring. Other ways we've been looking at trying to maximize the performance and the biomass of the cover crop is looking at how fall available nitrogen influences cover crop performance. And you can see here in a site where we went into that had very low available nitrogen, we created a dose of available nitrogen at six different rates in the fall and looked at how tiller density responded at two different counts. This is mid-tillering, and here is just pre-boot growth stage. And you can see there is a strong response in tiller density to nitrogen availability. And this corresponds really well to cereal rye biomass. And you can see here that at around 1,000 is when we're starting to get close to that threshold, what we'd like to see for starting to get adequate weed suppression. We're targeting somewhere around 800 grams per meter squared to get effective or at least persistent weed suppression for most summer annuals. We've been looking at, let's see here. Okay, in order to get a good establishment of the cover crop, you really need to drill the cover crop, particularly in the case of rye and vetch, to get good biomass. Aerial seeding is not going to be as effective to get uniform distributions of the cover crop, so we use standard drills or no-till drills, and we increase our seeding rates upwards of anywhere from 2 to 3 bushels of cereal rye per acre to get adequate biomass levels. But as we push this system and continue to push the system to get the weed suppression we need and start maximizing the cover crop biomass and the window in which time the cover crop is growing, we run into new challenges. And so, for example, establishing a crop in this kind of residue has been really difficult. Early years, we used drills because we wanted to get that canopy closure, and drills were just not effectively getting into the ground. We had a lot of seeds on the soil surface. So planters are more effective. We increase our seeding rates, particularly in the case of soybeans. Vetch, we've generally been able to get pretty good establishment using the planter. Other issues that we've been experimenting with, there are closing wheels, weight. Maybe this is less of an issue as you scale up to larger operations. Trash wheels, you can see some advantages we've found with the shark tooth, for example, at getting better populations and essentially pulverizing the rye, shredding it in these little bands. And then we've looked at also at some other culture types, all of which are really influenced by soil moisture levels. And so the timing of these operations and the level of moisture in the soil really drive its overall performance. I'm not going to talk about high residue cultivation in the interest of time today, but those interested in the group, I'd be happy to discuss some of our work after the session. Other antagonistic effects of cover crops relate to soil moisture. Most of you are familiar with that. We're working with cover crops, driving down available soil moisture in the spring. Depending on your region, you can get a recharge, and certainly with the presence of a cover crop, you'll get some greater benefit of persistence of that, of keeping the moisture in the system. As far as insects go, this is something that we've just recently started to work a little bit more on. We've had some problems with slugs, but mostly a lot of our issues have been cutworms, wireworms, seed corn maggot, and we really like these dark, cool, moist, high residue environments, and we've had a lot of problems with our populations, particularly with corn, and we've just gotten some funding recently to work on those questions. Cover crops becoming a weed. This is the case for rye and vetch in wheat, but it's particularly a concern in vetch. Growers are wanting their fields to look a little bit more like this than this. This is the potential with a vetch seed bank. There's a lot of concerns generally in our region. We've got 20 plus years of research by many individuals in the room, John Teasdale working on hairy vetch in the East Coast, yet we have minimal adoption of hairy vetch because most growers have the perception that it's immediately going to be weed in their system. So we've been kind of working on looking at that and seeing how much of it is perception-based and what is the persistence. So we have some experiments with a graduate student co-advising with Bill Kern at Penn State, looking at seed bank persistence of hairy vetch, how it might be influenced by burial depth, scarification, different varieties of hairy vetch. And then we're also looking at post-management practices, mechanical, organic, chemical, and traditional herbicides for managing hairy vetch and wheat. Finally, there's been some evidence of some biogeochemical antagonistic effects. In one year of our work, we saw evidence of iron deficiency at these higher mulch rates. And so this is something that we're going to be following up as well. Oops. So I've highlighted a number of tactics and some of the antagonistic issues associated with increasing biomass, but really we need to handle this work as a systems scientist. When you remove a lot of the main control tactics like mineral fertilizers, herbicides, cultivation, you're relying a lot on the biology and the ecology of the system to perform. And so it requires us not to just think about the overall system, but how all of these different components of the systems perform and how they interact so that we can manipulate those interactions. And so I title that that we're in search for synergy. We want to see a greater effect than the sum of the parts of our efforts. And so I really like this piece that just came out of collaboration with Penn State and us at Sassel. We got this work accepted. It's in the final state of revision. And here we looked at a gradient of rye biomass and soybean seeding rate. And this is just looking at an individual tactic at these three different levels of this tactic. But what we want to see is how these tactics interact. And is there a space where we're getting a greater response, for example, in the case of weed suppression or lower weed biomass than one might expect from these individual tactics alone. And so we use these models here below to look at the functional relationship between the mulch rate and the functional relationship of soybean seeding rate on weed biomass. And then we included interaction terms to test for see if there is a synergistic space where we're getting added control of the cover crop. And we did identify a synergic relationship in the case for both PA28 and Maryland 2009. And I think this highlights the direction we need to go with this type of research in order to get this type of a system to consistently function. And you can see here an example early on. The grasses were dominant at the low mulch rates, regardless of the different soybean densities. As the biomass increased, the grasses were less dominant. Smooth pigweed was stimulated by these higher moisture levels and the lack of grasses. And then when these weeds, the summer annuals, were suppressed, this is when the perennials came in. And you can see nutsedge dominated the site at the higher mulch where the others were suppressed. But at the higher seeding rates, we then got this interaction between both the mulch rate and the seeding rate and got very good control of perennials, which are hard to do in the case of these reduced tillage systems. So future research that we're going to be conducting, we've done a lot of this work in individual component experiments looking just at corn or just at soybeans or focusing on the cover crop. So we've got a long-term cropping system experiment that just got initiated of a corn, soybean, wheat rotation, and we'll be looking a lot at how this system performs within a rotation. We'll be manipulating different cash crop maturity groups, as well as looking more closely at the insect ecology and management within that system. We're moving away from just these pure vetch systems. In the case of the corn, vetch is a bit temperamental and challenging to get season-long weed control, particularly as you go further south in the mid-Atlantic region. So we're looking at combining mixtures and integrating poultry litter injection into supplement for our fertility source and as ways to minimize the weeds and optimize nitrogen use efficiency. We'll be further looking at high-residue cultivators across a window of different opportunities for management so we can maximize its performance as well as minimize its impact on the crop. We continue to need to work on enhancing equipment for seed placement. It's one of the critical challenges in the system is getting good established crop. And as anybody who's doing ecological-based weed management knows, the most important control tactic for weed management is having a highly competitive crop. And finally, we continue to do some work at looking at trying to maximize or quantify mobilization of nitrogen in the rye soybean system. With that, I want to thank a lot of my collaborators. This is really a group effort, and the various different funding agencies that has provided us with resources over the years.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Is there any questions for Stephen about his presentation?
Kathleen? Yes. The question was, did we apply nitrogen to the cereal rye and that data that we were looking at, differences in rye tillering? And in this case, we were just looking for rye response, and so we wanted a more controlled environment. So we weren't doing this on organic land, and we were using a mineral fertilizer just to conduct this experiment. But we have done some of this with poultry litter at different rates and saw a response as well. Yeah. Question?
I have a concern with the use of manure because eventually the standards should follow more of the EU, and it's not really sustainable to use confinement manure that's been highly treated. I mean, as an educator, I get a lot of consumers not liking that, so I like to see less research with using confinement manure. So where are you getting your chicken manure from?
Well, being in the Chesapeake Bay, we have two major sources of manure. My Pennsylvania collaborators tend to use dairy manure, and that's very abundant, and that's a component of their system. And being close to the Eastern Shore, where there's the highest density of chicken populations, we use poultry litter in the Maryland.
Yeah. But if the rules change, that's going to be difficult for organic farmers.
Possible.
I farm organically, so I have a bit of knowledge on that. We refuse to use confinement manure in our system.
Okay.
So I'm just saying that is a reality and something we, as researchers, should be aware of.
Yeah, and our early efforts have been for many years focusing on just a pure vetch crop going into the corn, and we have been able to get pretty decent yields and meet most of the nitrogen requirements of the crop. The shift is really in relationship to the limitations that vetch is providing for weed control. In fact, it can really turn into a pretty messy situation pretty quickly, particularly when the seed banks are high. So this has been a response to that. Yeah. But thank you.
Question?
I think that's the last point. It's quite good.
work did he with common vetch as opposed to hairy vetch?
No, I mean, we have a little bit of work that we're doing where we're characterizing different accessions of hairy vetch varieties. But as far as within the practice of these systems, we've solely been working with.
Well, hairy vetch is the East Coast Harley Davidson. Yeah. But here in the West, we use a common vetch more commonly. It's a bigger seed, and it doesn't have a hard seed like hairy vetch does. Mm-hmm. You can also scarify hairy vetch and reduce the hard seed carryover. About 3% of the seed are hard seed.
Yeah.
So you can eliminate those by scarifying the seed. But you might want to explore some other vetches.
Yeah, that's
wintering is a problem with common vetch. Yeah. I looked at that years ago, and it just doesn't come out.
But the comment on scarification is a really good one, and that's some of the work we have going on right now is actually showing some very striking results that at burial in the fall at time of planting, within 6 months, scarified seed is showing no viability seed remaining. So there is some potential there, and we'd be certainly interested to see that become more mechanized.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Round of applause for Stephen.